Thank you very much, Ken. Yeah, Zita, I love listening to you sharing from Brent Haskell's books, and I wasn't even looking at the computer. When I listen, my eyes, they go off and they stare at something. I can't even tell you what I was staring at, but my eyes are staring at something, and I'm listening. And so when I heard you apologize for going over, of course, you only went over 1 minute, but like I had no idea. You could have kept talking for 10 minutes, and I wouldn't have known. I would have just been listening and soaking it in. So I love listening to you. And Ken, when you first said that Regina was up next with "I Am That," I thought you said "I Am Bad." Like what? And then I realized, oh, he must have said "I Am That." I am that, not "I Am Bad." But yes, I am here with "I Am That" talks with Srinivas Gadatta Maharaj, and tonight I am beginning conversation number 10, which is called witnessing. So let's just jump right in. The questioner says, "I am full of desires and want them fulfilled. How am I to get what I want?" Which to me is a funny question to ask Nisargadatta. We'll see how he answers. How am I to get what I want? And Nisargadatta says, "Do you deserve what you desire? In some way or other, you have to work for the fulfillment of your desires. Put in energy and wait for the results." So Nisargadatta is answering his question. The questioner says, "Where am I to get the energy?" And Nisargadatta says, "The desire itself is energy." And the questioner asks, "Then why does not every desire get fulfilled?" And Nisargadatta says, "Maybe it was not strong enough and lasting." And the questioner says, "Yes, that's my problem. I want things, but I am lazy when it comes to action." And Nisargadatta says, and by the way, I have this next thing underlined from a prior time reading this conversation. "When your desire is not clear or strong, it cannot take shape. Besides, if your desires are personal, for your own enjoyment, the energy you give them is necessarily limited. It cannot be more than what you have." So that's, it's funny, I just felt my heart kind of go flutter, flutter as I read that. Two different desires kind of came to mind as I read that. One, of course, is the desire for truth realization, right? In order for our desire for truth realization to take shape, as he is saying, it needs to be clear in us and strong. And this again is why I don't know if you all were in Gentle Healing Year One, but in Gentle Healing Year One, what we did was we first of all determined a spiritual aspiration, and then we wrote kind of a vision plan for that spiritual aspiration. And we stayed with our vision plan, contemplating our vision plan for, I think it was about 6 weeks. And that was really in order to meet this requirement that Nisargadatta is talking about here, to make our desire clear and strong. If I say something like, "I want awakening," but I don't have a real clear vision of what that means to me, then my desire doesn't have any power. And so a part of what we wanted to do was we wanted to create a desire that had some power behind it, had something, some kind of momentum behind it. When we create a desire that has real momentum behind it, what we don't realize often is that we're communicating with the universe. And the universe will step up and help us achieve that desire if it's really strong and really clear. I still have my vision, my spiritual aspiration vision that I wrote last year. In fact, I can tell when I wrote it. It's right here on the note. It says I wrote this note on April 9th. So this is the vision that I wrote last year. Relaxed in self-certainty, I know where to place attention in every moment, including how to think, how to perceive, and how to spend my time. I easily focus attention without distraction. I use the mind effectively when it is useful. It rests silently when not in use. I abide in self-realization, even as the body is engaged in activity. I experience truth as it is without a second. I am the direct experience of truth. What do I want? To walk in step with God until I disappear into God. So, if I was, if three or four of us were all to say that we wanted awakening, and then we took the time to go and write out what that really means for us in kind of a vision plan format, and we bring our notes back together, we might find that the clarity of what we really want is not the same. For example, one of the things I wrote here was relaxed in self-certainty. And by the way, that's a capital S, not a little S. So one of the things that I wanted when I wrote this last April, and actually this part feels achieved now, I wanted to feel relaxed in capital S self-certainty, just as a way of being. I wanted to feel relaxed in self-certainty. I also wanted, because whenever you write a vision plan, you always write it in current tense as if it's already accomplished, right? So when I read these, even though they sound like current tense, at that time they were what you would call goals for me. Relaxed in self-certainty, I know where to place attention in every moment. So at that time, what that means is sometimes I wasn't certain what to do. I wasn't certain where to place my attention. Maybe there were three, four, five things that all could be done, and I didn't feel certain as to where to give my attention. And so one of the things I wanted is to feel that. And again, we can't ignore the first part of the sentence. Relaxed in self-certainty, right? So what I really meant was I wanted to be relaxed in the realization of the self. And from that state of being relaxed in the realization of the self, I wanted it to be automatic that I knew where to place my intention in every moment, including how to think, how to perceive, and how to spend my time. Right? So somebody else might not have this in their vision statement, right? I said, I easily focus attention without distraction. And I do remember this. I remember specifically last year, I'd be like doing something, and then maybe I needed to run over to email in order to get some information. And on the way to email, I would see Yahoo News. And I'd stop and I'd read the news, and then I'd forget what I had been working on. And I felt distracted, like I felt like I was easily distracted. And so I wanted to easily focus attention without distraction. And I do feel like that's accomplished now, too. I easily focus attention without distraction. I use the mind effectively when it is useful. It rests silently when not in use. And I can't say my mind rests silently all the time yet. So this part of the vision statement I am still working towards. I use the mind effectively when it is useful. It rests silently when not in use. I abide in self-realization, even as the body is engaged in activity. And I do feel like that's much more accomplished than it was last year. I had to describe that, but there is this, well, there's this sense of self-realization that is present, and it doesn't disappear when I'm busy, right? It's always present. I abide in self-realization even as the body is engaged in activity. I experience truth as it is, that I feel like I am still moving towards. I experience truth as it is without a second. That means that I know only truth, right? I am the direct experience of truth. Again, still moving towards that one. What do I want? To walk in step with God until I disappear into God. So, this type of work, which again we did a year ago, and I actually think that the people that are in year one gentle healing right now are right at that stage right now. So maybe some of them will hear this and it will be helpful to them. I don't know. But it's really helpful to clarify the goal. You know, so whatever your spiritual aspiration is, whether you're saying you want truth, you want healing, you want awakening, you know, what does that mean? You know, take the time to kind of sit with your heart and look at it a little more clearly. And, you know, what does healing mean? How will you know if healing is accomplished, right? What does that mean? And so that's what Nisargadatta is saying here, is your goals need to be clear, right? And strong, right? It's not something that you just kind of sort of are interested in. This has to be something that you really value and you really want and you're willing to put your attention towards, right? When your desire is, in this case, he's using the negative because he's talking to a questioner who just said that he's lazy. When your desire is not clear or strong, it cannot take shape. So if we put that in the positive, that means if our desire is clear and strong, it can take shape. And maybe we should even say it will take shape, right? And then the next thing he says is, and this is a really interesting sentence, besides, if your desires are personal for your own enjoyment, the energy you give them is necessarily limited. It cannot be more than what you have. So when he says you in this sentence, he's not referring to the true self, he's referring to the false self. If it's a personal goal or desire, it comes from the personal self, not from the heart. It's going to be limited based on your personal self-confidence, right? And your personal energy. I'm going to say there's not going to be as much universe behind it. I'm not going to say there's not going to be any universe behind it, because maybe there still is some universe behind it, depending on what the goal is. But there's not going to be as much universe behind it. When your goal is selfless, right? When your desire is selfless, when it serves the universe, then the universe gets behind it. Awakening is actually a selfless goal. You might remember that Ramana Maharshi said that there is no greater service rendered than your own self-realization. So, although sometimes the ego tries to tell us that our goal of self-realization is selfish, the truth is it isn't. The truth is it's a universal goal. And so when we set the goal of wanting to heal our mind or wanting to realize truth or know thyself or awaken or be only love or however we word that, right? That's a universal goal. And so the universe gets behind it. And so there's really more power there than the limited power of the false self. So I'll read this paragraph again. Well, I'm just going to pause for a second. I had mentioned that two desires came to mind when I read this. The first desire was, of course, the desire for truth realization. But the second desire that came to mind was the desire for the Awakening Together Retreat Center. You see, the desire for the Awakening Together Retreat Center is a selfless goal, a selfless desire. And I'm sure you guys have probably heard this story before, so I'll tell it briefly. But oh, I hear rain. I think I do. Is it rain or is it wind? I want rain. I'm hoping for rain here. That's not a selfish goal either. I want it for my tree. Because the guy hasn't come by and turned my sprinklers on yet, and I know my tree needs some water. Okay, anyway, when I was on silent retreat in Santa Barbara at a Saint Franciscan retreat center, a monastery actually. I hear thunder too. I think my tree's going to get a drink. I was One morning, I felt to walk over to the nearby St. Clair church that I had heard about, but I hadn't been to. And when I got there, I went inside and there was no one there. And I went up to the front and I kind of dropped to my knees. And when I dropped to my knees, my heart just blew wide open. I mean, it was really like a very holy moment. My heart just blew wide open, and this in and out began to happen, and that all of my personal desires and all of my personal attachments kind of would rise up before my eyes, and I would let go of them and they would leave. And this was kind of happening automatically. It was rise up before my eyes, I would look at it and let it go, and it would leave. And what happened, it fairly quickly in a few minutes, is that I became what felt like totally empty. Where I didn't want anything for the self. I wasn't attached to anything. I would have gone anywhere. I would have done anything, that God or guidance asked me to do. And that's when the vision for the Awakening Together Retreat Center dropped in. It dropped into me. And there was this knowing that it was going to be a place, a lovely environment where people could come on personal retreats in order to be quiet, to get still, to feel inspired by the environment and take their next step with God, whatever their next step was. And in fact, I also knew that it had to be a place where everyone could come. So like if anybody ever said, "Oh, this place should just be for Awakening Together members," I'd be like, "Whoa, that wasn't the guidance. This is for everyone. The purpose needs to be that they're coming there in order to go within, to get within their heart, and to take their next step. But whether they're Awakening Together member, whether they're a Baptist that needs that, it doesn't matter. This is a place where everyone can go to take their individual next step with God. And our job is to provide an environment that makes that easier for them, right? So this vision dropped in. And so it's really interesting when I look at this paragraph. With that desire in mind, again, it says the desire needs to be clear and it needs to be strong, right? And so it's really important. We have a retreat center subcommittee. It's really important that everyone on that subcommittee has the same vision and has clarity regarding that vision. It wouldn't help if I was envisioning one thing and Lisa another and Phil another and Jacqueline another, then we don't have a clear, strong, unified vision. But when we all have the same vision, and of course, if others join us in that vision, like a place that we really feel is the right place for the Awakening Together Retreat Center is a ranch in La Vida, Colorado called Big Wall Ranch. And while I was in Ireland, Hal Seeley came here and Lisa took him down to Big Wall Ranch, you know, so he got to see it and he got to see how perfect it is. And so now he's in that vision. And this Friday, I'm taking Ken and Rebecca and Jacqueline, but Jacqueline's been there before, but I'm taking Ken and Rebecca down to Big Wall Ranch. I've taken Francine and Danielle and Ron and Jasmine to Big Wall Ranch. We showed videos. I showed videos to, who was it, Anne and was it Anne and Kate that I showed the videos to? I remember showing it to Anne while we were in Ireland, right? So, you know, as we all get very, very clear on the exact same vision, right? We add that strength to it. And again, it's not a personal vision, right? It's not just for our own enjoyment. This is something that, in effect, the universe has asked for, and we are bringing into manifestation for the purpose that the universe requested, so that everyone place to go to take their next step with God, you know, a retreat place where they can have personal retreats. So those were the two desires that came to mind when I read this paragraph, the desire of self-realization and the desire of the Awakening Together Retreat Center. So when your desire is not clear or strong, it cannot take shape. Oh, another thing I've done, which maybe has involved many of you in the visioning of the Awakening Together Retreat Center, is I've posted several times in the last few months pictures of Big Wall Ranch. And I know many of you have looked at those pictures, and I've seen people type comments like, I can see myself there, right? You know, so in that way, more and more people are getting involved in this visioning process, and that's really wonderful. The strength and the clarity of that vision. So when your desire is not clear or strong, it cannot take shape. Besides, if your desires are personal for your own enjoyment, the energy you give them is necessarily limited. It cannot be more than what you have. And the questioner said, yet often ordinary persons do attain what they desire. And Ms. Argadatta says, after desiring it very much and for a long time, even then their achievements are limited. You know, one person that comes to mind for me is Donald Trump. You know, one thing I noticed about Donald Trump when he was running for president, there was something I noticed that he had that that I wasn't certain anybody else really had like he did. He could really see himself as president. He could really see the people electing him. You know, I think the others hoped they would make it to president, hoped, you know, that people would vote for them. But I don't think Donald Trump doubted it for a minute. You know, he had that strength of vision. He was certain. He really was. He was certain, even when it seemed like a kind of a joke that Donald Trump would ever be our president. He was already certain. And since then, I've seen interviews that go back a number of years. And you can hear him say in those interviews, well, one day I'm going to run for president, and yada, 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 you know, back, you know, many years ago. So he had a certainty of a vision, and he held to that vision with that certainty. And guess what? For better or worse, he's our president. You know, he's our president. So he had a strength and a clarity, and he held to it for many years, for a long time, this vision of being president. So after desiring it very much and for a long time, you know, even ordinary persons can attain their desires, but their achievements are limited. And again, I think we can look at Donald Trump and we can see that this is true too. Because even though Donald Trump was able to envision himself as president and, in effect, envision himself into the presidency, not all of his agenda items have come to be, nor do I think they will. right? So he is president, but the full effect that he hoped for probably is not going to be accomplished. So his achievements are limited, right? Now the questioner says, and what about unselfish desires? And Nisargadatta says, when you desire the common good, the whole world desires with you. Oh my God, that just blew my heart wide open. When you desire the common good, the whole world desires with you. Make humanity's desire your own and work for it. There you cannot fail. Oh my goodness. My heart is fluttering. So let me tell you another brief story. When the day for the we're going back to the retreat center here. The day that the vision came for the retreat center, I went back to the St. Francis Monastery and I emailed, I think, the member board of trustees and the board of directors and told them about the vision immediately. I also told the people who were there at the retreat, like Ken and Rebecca were there. I told them. I remember telling them specifically. And it seems to me this memory might be slightly wrong. It seems to me I was on the plane heading home from there. This part is not wrong. It's only where I was that might be wrong. But this part of the story I remember distinctly. When I heard what I would have called the energy of Nisargadatta Maharaj, literally, it was Nisargadatta. And that's funny because we're reading him now. I heard Nisargadatta Maharaj tell me, start now. Referring to the retreat center, start now. And so I understood that command. In fact, I've told Lisa that, told Lisa that story that as I was hurt, I heard immediately, start now. I told her that story because when NTI was written, there came a point towards the end of NTI being written where I knew NTI was going to be published because I received a title while mowing the lawn one day. I received the picture of the cover in a dream one night. So because I started receiving these things, I knew it was going to be published. But with NTI, when it came to publishing it, I was told to do nothing. A publisher would be provided. And that's exactly what happened, right? But with the retreat center, it was different. With the retreat center, I wasn't told do nothing. I was told start now. And so when I came back, I created the portion of our website that focuses on the retreat center. I announced it in the next member meeting. We started a campaign to raise funds, right? We started now. So what the reason I said that is because this says when you desire the common good, the whole world desires with you. So what's happening, the feeling, how much has been raised now? It's a little over 150,000. Actually, donations this year for the retreat center seem to be down. Now I haven't gone in and verified that. But it seems like we used to be increasing at the rate of about 2,000 a month, and now we're increasing at the rate it's less than 1,000 a month. It might even be less than 500 a month. So it's slowed down a little bit. But I think that's probably because people have moved their money to supporting the operational budget. Because last December I showed that we were looking at an $18,000 deficit this year, so I think a lot of people moved their money. So I'm sure the donations are probably the same or even up, but the retreat center itself is down now. So, but that's, that's okay. But what I wanted to say was, when the instructions came to start now, and we started by raising funds and all of that, what I really felt was that, my job and eventually our job, it was just my job first because I'm the one who received the vision. was to start now in order to start stirring the universal pot. To start now in order to start stirring the universal pot. In other words, as we start working towards the retreat center by raising money, having information on our web page about it, etc. And now running, I go down to La Vida all the time. I mean, I literally feel like it's a part of my job to go to La Vida frequently. A part of this job getting the retreat center. And as we do all this, it's like we're stirring the universal pot. We are saying to the universe, yes, we are going to do this. Yes, we are doing this, right? And as we stir that universal pot, the energy of the universe is getting stirred up. And at some point, universal energy being all stirred up, something's going to happen. That what exactly? I don't know. But something's going to happen to bring this vision into fruition because it's for the common good. And the whole world desires with us. We kind of have to lead the way. You could say we were the ones assigned to lead the way on this particular vision, but the universe is going to get right behind us, right? It's going to back us up. So Nisargadatta says, when you desire the common good, the whole world desires with you. Now listen to this next sentence. Make humanity's desire your own and work for it. There you cannot fail. So you see, that's what we're doing. When we send our money in for the retreat center, we look at the pictures that Regina posts on Facebook of Big Wall Ranch, or when we come down to Vita ourselves and say, Regina, show me Big Wall Ranch, right? Or when we buy our lottery tickets and we say, the first 5 million or 10 million or 20 million is for the retreat center, right? When we do whatever it is that we're doing to help stir that pot, when we're working for it in our own way, right? We're not going to fail. Because we have a strong, clear vision that's for the common good of the universe, and we followed that instruction that said start now, right? And it's exciting. It's exciting to see how this is going to complete itself. So when you desire the common good, the whole world desires with you. Make humanity's desire your own and work for it. There you cannot fail. Now let's look at that again, this time not talking about the retreat center, but self-realization. Remember, Ramana Maharshi said that the greatest service you can render is your own self-realization. So, your own self-realization is for the common good of the whole world. It's the greatest service you can render. And so, if you desire your own self-realization, and you work for it, you cannot fail because the whole world desires with you. And the universal energy will appear and give you whatever it is that you need. Although I can't remember all of the stories. Ooh, it's getting really excitingly dark outside. Those clouds are about almost as dark as clouds can get. When you desire, right, for the common good, and remember your self-realization is for the common good, the whole world gets behind you. And in the last week, I've heard several stories, although I can't specifically remember them all. I've heard several stories of people talking about how they got confirmations. Like maybe they were writing something with inner wisdom through their gentle healing homework. And then they'd hear somebody else say it, or they'd read it somewhere, or it would show up in a song. And I've heard several stories in the last week of people receiving confirmations. Those confirmations are showing up at a time when people are learning to listen to inner wisdom and when doubt can arise about what they're writing. When the ego can say things like, oh, this is just your ego, right? Or, right? But then the confirmation arises from another source. That's an example of the whole world, the universe getting behind your desire for self-realization. When these random confirmations come in to show you that you are on the right path. Yeah, Jay is saying the goal of the ego is to get you to stop writing it all and to doubt yourself. And in the universe, responds to that by giving you these random confirmations, right? I think it was Nancy that was talking last night that that in her writing the word free falling came through, and for some reason she thought that was presumptuous, which means she doubted it. She thought it was the ego. And then the name of Jacqueline's weekly gathering is about free falling, and her whole service is about free falling. See, that was an example of a random confirmation, right? So when we desire the common good and our self-realization is the common good, when we desire the common good, the whole world desires with us. Nisargadatta says, make humanity's desire your own and work for it. Hear the work for it in there, right? Work for it. And so when we do our gentle healing homework or whatever we are doing to move towards self-realization, that's our working for it. Make humanity's desire your own and work for it. There you cannot fail. And the reason we can't fail is it isn't just our own little power. The entire universe backs us up on those universal desires. Now, the questioner says, humanity is God's work, not mine. I am concerned with myself. Have I not the right to see my legitimate desires fulfilled? They will hurt no one. My desires are legitimate, they are right. Desires, why don't they come true? Nisargadatta says, desires are right or wrong according to circumstances. It depends on how you look at them. It is only for the individual that a distinction between right and wrong is valid. And the questioner says, what are the guidelines for such a distinction? How am I to know which of my desires are right and which are wrong? Nisargadatta says, in your case, desires that lead to sorrow are wrong, and those that lead to happiness are right. But you must not forget others. Their sorrow and happiness also count. Oh, that's a good answer. How do I know the difference between a right desire and a wrong desire? A wrong desire leads to sorrow or suffering. Not just for you, it's not you we have to consider, but others as well. Just a completely imaginary example is imagine someone who desires to be rich. They want to be really, really rich. And then the ideas that come to them that they follow in order to become rich involve scamming other people, taking money from other people, and not really delivering the product that you promised, right? Well, then other people are hurt. Therefore, that was a wrong desire, right? A right desire would be a desire in which or through which no one gets hurt. Think about that. That's a right desire. And that's a pretty nice gauge. And of course, we can tell that through our own self-realization, that would be a right desire. This retreat center, I feel, is a right desire. And then there are other desires, desire to have a roof over your head instead of being homeless. Maybe the desire to have children, right? Or the desire to have a pet, right? There are all kinds of desires that can be very, very benign. No one is hurt. And so those desires are all fine. But if someone is hurt through what you desire, then that is a wrong desire. And a wrong desire, of course, it would be best just to let that one go. Also, another way that desires can hurt is if while they are unfulfilled, desiring them causes you suffering. Let me give you an example. I used to know a woman who, I may have mentioned this example before, I used to know a woman who felt like in her entire life she had never had a really good relationship with a man who really loved her, really cherished her, right? And that's what she wanted. She wanted this relationship with the man that she'd always dreamed of. And so she was always on dating sites, always meeting some guy. She thought this was going to be the one. And usually, in a very short time, 2 or 3 months, it went really, really sour. And then she was looking again. And the entire time that she was attempting to fulfill this desire, she was suffering. In fact, this was back when I used to do one-on-one coaching, and she was a person that I did one-on-one coaching with. And just week after week after week, the conversation was about how she couldn't find Mr. Right. And so what I suggested is that she let go of that desire. That the desire itself was causing her suffering. Right? And if she would just decide she did not need Mr. Right, you know, she had a good job, she had 2 or 3 grown sons that she had a good relationship with, she had lots of friends, she could have been happy right then if she let go of this desire. The desire was the cause of her suffering. So a desire could be a wrong desire, not because once it's obtained, it hurts someone, right? Like there's nothing wrong about a healthy relationship with a man, right? That can be a very, you know, that's a wonderful thing, right? But the desire itself, and again, this was a long-term desire, so this was a long-term suffering. The desire itself was the cause of her current suffering. Therefore, it was a wrong desire. Right? You can really tell if we look carefully with discernment whether a desire is right or wrong. And again, wrong in this case does not mean that because you desire it, you're guilty. Wrong means it's not right for you. It's not what's in your best interest. Or it's not right for the universe. It's not what's in the universe's best interest. Kathy is asking, did she stop looking? Actually ended up letting go of me as a coach because she grew tired of me suggesting that she stop looking. So, yeah. And of course, I don't know the rest of the story because I haven't been in touch with her in years now. So, in your case, desires that lead to sorrow are wrong, right? Meaning not that you're guilty for having the desire, but it's not what's in your best interest or it's not what's in the universe's best interest. In your case, desires that lead to sorrow are wrong, and those that lead to happiness are right. But you must not forget others. Their sorrow and happiness also count. And the questioner says, results are in the future. How can I know what they will be? And Nisargadatta says, use your mind. Remember, observe. You are not different from others. Most of their experiences are valid for you too. Think clearly and deeply. Go into the entire structure of your desires and their ramifications. They are a most important part of your mental and emotional makeup and powerfully affect your actions. Remember, you cannot abandon what you do not know. To go beyond yourself, you must know yourself. So the way I really take that answer is Nisargadatta kind of saw the question, right? Results are in the future. How can I know what they will be as a cop-out? Yeah, that's a cop-out. Use your mind, you know, contemplate this. Look at other people who have had the same desire. I mean, you know, that's to say that you don't know whether this is a desire that's going to cause sorrow or happiness, that's a cop-out. All you have to do is really look. You know, if you take time to look, you will know the answer to that. Yeah, how do I feel? Kathy says. So questioner. Because he said to go beyond yourself, you must know yourself. That's how he ended that. And so the questioner says, what does it mean to know myself? By knowing myself, what exactly do I come to know? And Nisargadatta answers, all that you are not. And of course, that's an answer that we understand, right? It's all of those false beliefs, all of what I think I am is not what I am. And so in order to know my true self, first I have to recognize everything I'm not, right? So that's what Nisargadatta is explaining to this person. What does it mean to know myself? By knowing myself, what exactly do I come to know? And Nisargadatta says, all that you are not. And the questioner says, and not what I am? And Nisargadatta says, what you are, you already are. By knowing what you are not, you are free of it and remain in your own natural state. It all happens quite spontaneously and effortlessly. And again, we understand what Nisargadatta is saying, but I have a feeling that for this questioner, this is new. Like nobody's ever said, you come to know yourself by first knowing all that you are not, right? This is new to this questioner. So let's see what he does with it. He says, and what do I discover? And Nisargadatta says, you discover that there is nothing to discover. You are what you are, and that is all. The questioner says, but ultimately, what am I? And Nisargadatta says, the ultimate denial of all you are not. You know, so what Nisargadatta is really saying is that what you are, I can't tell you. Right, what you are is beyond words. But if you find everything you're not, and you realize you are not any of that, right, and you let go of all of that, then what remains, that's what you are. But again, since this is all new to this particular questioner, as you guys I'm sure can imagine, that makes no sense at all. Probably the first time we heard this kind of non-dual talk, we were like, huh? This guy's speaking in riddles. At least that's how I remember feeling once upon a time. And I'm sure that's how this particular questioner feels. So you discover that there is nothing to discover. You are what you are, and that is all. And the questioner says, but ultimately, what am I? And Nisargadatta says, the ultimate denial of all you are not. And the questioner says, and this has an exclamation point, so he may have been quite frustrated. The questioner says, I do not understand. So Nisargadatta says, is your fixed idea that you must be something or other that blinds you? And we understand that too, right? The idea that I am something. I mean, that's what the ego is, right? The ego is, you know, mental identification with a specific form as what I am, right? And so it's a fixed idea, a mental identification with a specific form is a fixed idea. And Nisargadatta says it is your fixed idea that you must be something or other that blinds you. And the questioner says, how can I get rid of this idea? Which is interesting because this is the first time that he isn't kind of arguing with Nisargadatta, right? He's like, wait a minute, well, how can I get rid of this idea then if I'm blind? You know, so that's interesting. And I'm noticing Jay says the Nickelback song, Gotta Be Somebody, has 50.5 million views on YouTube. Yeah, and that's the fixed idea, right? The gotta be somebody. Yeah. So how can I get rid of this idea? Nisargadatta says, if you trust me, believe when I tell you that you are the pure awareness that illuminates consciousness and its infinite content. Realize this and live accordingly. If you do not believe me, then go within, inquire, what am I? Or focus your mind on I am, which is pure and simple being. So we all know that this answer just given was absolutely perfect, right? Trust that you are pure awareness, that you illuminate all of consciousness and all of its content, and then live as awareness, right? If you don't believe that, then go within and ask, what am I? Or go within and focus your mind on the I am presence, right? We know these answers. This is how you realize the truth. And the questioner says, what does my faith in you depend on? Because again, remember, Nisargadatta started, if you trust me, right? Before he gave him these meditation techniques in effect, he said, if you trust me. And so the questioner says, what does my faith in you depend on? And Nisargadatta says, on your insight into other people's hearts. If you cannot look into my heart, look into your own. And the questioner says, I can do neither, right? I can't look in my heart. I can't look in your heart. Nisargadatta says, purify yourself by a well-ordered and useful life. Watch over your thoughts, feelings, words, and actions. This will clear your vision. And this is something we understand too, right? That, you know, if I'm not able to know my own heart, if I'm not able to be clear, okay, so as compared to the 50 million people who want to be somebody, we only have 348,000 who watch Nisargadatta Maharaj, I am only the self. Much smaller, right? Okay, so going back to this. If I'm not able to know my own heart, meaning if I'm not able to know the clarity of my own heart, then I need purification first, right? We know this. And notice Nisargadatta's prescription for purification is exactly the prescription that we follow. Watch over your thoughts, feelings, words, and actions, right? Don't just automatically believe everything you think or feel, you know? Don't just do whatever your thoughts tell you to do. Slow down, pay attention, look, discern, let go of what's wrong-minded, rest, accept, and trust through those strong feelings. They also are based on the wrong mind, right? We know how to purify, and this is what Nisargadatta is telling him. The questioner says, must I not renounce everything first and live a homeless life? Nisargadatta says, you cannot renounce. You may leave your home and give trouble to your family, but attachments are in the mind and will not leave you until you know your mind inside and out. First things first, know yourself, all else will come with it. So this person must be an Indian person, because a lot of Indians have this belief that in order to be a religious man, you need to leave your family and become a beggar, right? And so you're like, isn't this what I have to do? That's what I always heard. And Nisargadatta is basically telling him, all that's going to do is cause trouble for your family. You know, you're the man of the house. You're supporting the wife and the children. If you leave them, the only thing that's going to do is cause more trouble. And your mind is still going to be right there burdening you in your homeless state. So forget about that. Stay right where you are. First things first, right? Start with purification. And then when there's enough clarity, focus on the I am presence or use self-inquiry and come to know yourself. Now do that. Forget out these ideas about leaving your family. And the questioner says, but you already told me that I am the supreme reality. Is this not self-knowledge? And Nisargadatta says, of course you are the supreme reality, but what of it? Every grain of sand is God. To know it is important, but that is only the beginning. The questioner says, you told me that I am the supreme reality. I believe you. What next is there for me to do? Nisargadatta says, I told you already. Discover all you are not. Body, feelings, thoughts, ideas, time, space, being and not being, this or that, nothing concrete or abstract that you can point to is you. Nothing concrete or abstract that you can point to is you. A mere verbal statement will not do. You may repeat a formula endlessly without any result whatsoever. You must watch yourself continuously, particularly your mind, moment by moment, missing nothing. This witnessing is essential for the separation of the self from the not self. There's only a few more sentences here, so I'm going to finish. The questioner says, the witnessing, is it not my real nature? Nisargadatta says, for witnessing, there must be something else to witness. We are still in duality. And the questioner says, what about witnessing the witness? Awareness of awareness. And Nisargadatta says, putting words together will not take you far. Go within and discover what you are not. Nothing else matters. So it looks like he feels this particular questioner was trying to skip steps based on, you know, what he's already heard. What about awareness, watching awareness? He's like, no, you need to purify. So that's the end of that conversation, and thanks for letting me take an extra minute. Bye-bye.